What's going on, girls? Is it weird walking around with like $24,000 in pussy per hour together, you know? Are you worried that you're like, that's a lot of value that you're walking around with, and it could be dangerous. Like you should take your pussy around in a brakes truck if you're all going to be together. Thank you, Jacob Jr., a real motherfucker.
Yo, you wanna not play the music?
Oh man, it's Jay-Z though, man. Jay-Z and Young Jeezy.
You know, I'm always trapping.
They sold drugs for real. They ain't even none of that fucking commercialized rap shit. Them niggas sold drugs for real.
I know, I don't want to disrespect Jay-Z, but what I'm saying is I'm entrapping you into a little
drugs for real.
Podcast segment because you were a little heated tonight. You know what I'm saying?
I'm already heated. I'll just aggravate. I'm done with these extra motherfuckers, yo.
Extra motherfuckers?
Yeah, it's too many extra motherfuckers who want to come out and they think getting on the microphone is going to keep them alive. You're going to commit suicide and die, okay? Just go do that shit. I don't have time for this shit no more. I'm not going to be babying grown-ass fucking men who fucking want to be prima donnas and fucking children about fucking going up and shit. If you came out to do comedy, you came out to do comedy. You're not going to whine about when you go up or how you go up. You just want to go up.
Right.
If it's at an open mic. If it's at an open mic, you just want to go up and fucking work on whatever.
Yeah, so like the first couple of times, you know, I came to La Nui. You put me at the end. You put me on the end a bunch of times. And then, you know, you put me second or something. And then you like my stuff. And then you kind of bump me up the thing. And then, you know, it's a process.
You got to know how to work a motherfucker in there. You know what I mean? Like LeBron James don't get enough credit.
Right.
He passed the ball too much at the end of the game. That's because he trusts his teammates. If you set those motherfuckers up right, honestly, if they sorry as hell, if they wide open, they should be able to make the shot. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
But sometimes I set some of these motherfuckers up, they be wide open, and it's a fucking air ball. It's an air ball, or it's a fucking brick that bounces off the rim and hits some lady in the first row in her face and knocks her drink all over her fucking blouse.
And then four people leave, and then eight more people leave, and the show's over.
It's a ripple effect. They're like, oh, shit. They're like, oh, shit, they're leaving. Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's just, if the door's already opening, we're not really causing a disturbance.
It's fucking intermission and shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I ain't got time for that shit, man. Like, it's too many motherfuckers not. They don't really want to do comedy. Like, these motherfuckers just want to vent.
So you're saying that there's hobby people that come to the open mic?
There's too many hobbyists who want to be treated like fucking comics and shit. And why would I bump or make a motherfucker who actually is trying to do this shit, who actually trying to get the reps in so they can become who they are off stage, on stage, or the person they think they are, for some motherfucker who just want to try to figure out the easiest way to disrespect somebody else and shit. You know what I'm saying?
So you think they're mad about something else and they're... I've seen this stand-up
act. They're mad about their life.
Okay? I've seen this stand-up act where this one girl was just like, oh my God, my friend Tiffany, this is what she did.
Mm-hmm.
I got a dress. She got the same dress.
And motherfuckers okay? Come here.
I'm just eating lunch. She gets the same lunch.
Couple weeks. I just got divorced and I'm fucking sad and I want to fucking vent. You know what I mean? I understand, but they got fucking therapists for that shit. I don't get paid enough to be a therapist. You know what I mean? I like sometimes this shit helps me out, fucking gives me new material and shit. And it fucking, you know what I mean? I don't mind helping people. And I do comedy to make motherfuckers laugh and forget about the crazy shit.
Right.
Look at this shit. This is some new shit uptown. This shit wasn't here. All these fucking places, you know why it wasn't here?
Oh, the McDonald's and
yeah, you can see past this red light.
Yeah.
All that shit was a project. And that shit wouldn't be there because that shit doesn't take food stamps. McDonald's takes food stamps.
So they knocked all the projects down and put a Taco Bell?
They put a Ross, a Taco Bell, a PetSmart. Talk about gentrification, nigga.
Yeah.
Fuck the project. We putting up this PetSmart and then Starbucks.
Yeah. But corporate.
I don't know, man. I think I'm at my fucking wits end with all the bullshit. like, I'm trying to do comedy. I ain't trying to baby motherfuckers and motherfuckers come around and, like, for instance, one motherfucker come. Tell him, okay, I'm about to put somebody else up. It's a fucking open mic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really not that big of a deal. Especially with the audiences you're working with. It ain't like you fucking just gonna really throw off your set. You know
okay,
what I mean?
So do you mind if I just fill in some gaps here? Like, I show up, right? It's me and Eber Zabel, right? And then you're like, okay, well, I guess it'll be Eber Zabel, then Eric. Byron shows up, then you're like, okay, so we'll go white, black, white.
Right.
So it'll go Ibrisoffel, Byron, Eric, right. White, black, white.
Right.
And then you're like, do you want to switch and go 1-3? And then, so I went first, then it was Byron, then it was Ibrisoffel. And then John Rowe shows up, and then someone is about to go on stage all of a sudden, because we haven't had a black person for a while.
We haven't had any, it ain't just about being black, but we haven't had that much diversity here.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I try to keep people, I don't want people looking at the same thing all the time. With no offense to black comics, and no offense to white comics, but it seems like all those motherfuckers sound like baby Eddie Murphy's more boring versions of Seinfeld. You know what I'm saying? And it's fucking, you can't deal with that shit. Like, Seinfeld was Seinfeld because he was the king of boring comedy. You know what I'm saying? He turned that shit into a fucking classic TV show. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But that shit's been done. You know what I'm saying? Like, Tupac was a thug. That shit's been done.
Yeah.
Get your own gimmick as a rapper. Not a gimmick, but get your own.
But what you're saying is you just want to break up the show. And then when that system, because also, you know,
I don't need to be questioned about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I ask you to do something, if you came to be an open micer, you came for the open mic and you just came to perform, you're not going to care really anyway.
And you kind of don't really set up a list so much as look at the situation.
Because I don't want motherfuckers having a bad. Yeah, I don't want motherfuckers being like, oh man, you told me I was going to put me 7
and
shit.
Right.
I want to feel the show out and I want the audience to stay in the room.
Yeah.
And if I know you going up after this person who was just this type of comic, and you're this type of comic, and you're going to piss everybody else off, I'm not going to put you up right after that person, because I see the vibe in the room is going to automatically switch. You're going to fuck it up for everybody else that has to go up.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
you feel out the person's act and the tolerance level of the audience.
You know what I mean?
And then you got a bunch of guys on deck,
right.
And it goes, okay, well, you. Okay, you now we should have a lesbian, really. A black lesbian. Because we just got the neo-Nazi.
That will fix it.
So let's fix it.
Or maybe we need to get this black lesbian up here to fix this guy who just told 20 abortion jokes. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm going to bump this guy who I know is going to come up here and tell 20 more abortion jokes.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? For this black lesbian and shit.
Do you feel like your part of the job description sometimes is like therapist, because you're seeing a lot of people at a very weird time in their life when they think, I'm not going to be a lawyer anymore. I'm going to make millions of dollars at stand-up comedy. I drove here from Texas. Let me say, I've been in the car for 15 hours.
Right.
I just left the law firm.
I'm a black man who's 33, and I've made it through a lot of shit in America. I ain't been shot. I don't have no kids. I actually got married and I'm living a happy life and shit. You know what I'm saying? I'm beating the statistics. And I feel like I'm dealing with a lot of motherfuckers who just, they want to be the statistics and shit, son. And I'm trying to help them not be the statistics, but they just fucking, like, my life's over. This comedy shit is for everybody. Because everybody can be a comic. You know what I mean? Two shots of Jack and a bottle of Bud and you're a fucking comic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of alcoholics. Like, that. This one guy is, like, giving me an ear beating outside. Like, oh, I could be a comic. How do you get the courage? How do you get the courage? I'm like, pick a fucking day, write your fucking jokes, and then show up on that fucking day to the open mic.
I mean, if you're Hudson and you want to work that shit out, you will return after you realize you made a fucking idiot out of yourself and the craft. Like, people don't respect it as a craft. They respect it as fucking shit talking on the corner.
Yeah, and it is hard. You know, I get it, because you're gonna probably bomb the first 70 times you do it.
You know what I mean? You might bomb. You might be good the first 70 times, and you might come back and bomb the next 70 times.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
And then you're just like, become an alcoholic trying to figure out how to restore your fucking former glory.
And it's like, you're already, like you said, most of these motherfuckers coming off of a failure. They're coming off a major failure, a divorce, or a fucking wife left them for a lesbian. You know what I'm saying? Like, so these motherfuckers, their fucking acting career ain't working out like it's supposed to be, but they're actors, so they can remember a monologue. So they go remember, like, half a fucking George Carlin set, and then half a Richard Pryor set, or half of some set that they think nobody else has seen, and they come and recite that shit in monologue form, and they're like, oh, I'm a comedian.
Or
shit.
Worse. An actor writes himself.
He writes him a set. And he tries to act that shit out. Like, that's his personality. When you talk to him off stage, he's not even that person. Like, I see girls sometimes go on stage with a fucking annoying voice because they think that works for them as a comic and shit. But when you talk to them, they're a normal person. Like,
yeah.
People laugh at people that they can relate to. Regular motherfuckers.
Yeah.
That's what they laugh at.
I'm not naming names, but I saw someone get up and, you know, I see them, yeah. You know, they were wearing something super, super, super sexy. And it's just like, it's, you're stomach really sending.
It's your navel showing.
I'm just saying.
But you're mad. You're mad when motherfuckers looking at you like that, though. You don't like that. You want them to notice your jokes.
That's, well, I'm just saying, it's like so much mixed signals. It's like, you know,
maybe your neighbor should be telling those jokes.
There is a way that a prostitute dresses. You like, if I mean? You're dressed like a prostitute and you're sending the sexual visual signals out there so clearly, and yeah, then you're also going, hey, listen to my jokes, it's like
confusing. Ain't nothing wrong with being a sexy guy, man. Ain't nothing wrong with being a sexy guy. There's nothing females, wrong with it. You know, I don't know. I don't judge men and shit, but like, you know what I mean? If you want to go with that, you know what I mean? I want to be the sexy comic thing. That's awesome. Do that shit. But be funny, because at the end of the day, looks don't tell jokes and shit. You know what I'm saying? You need jokes. You need personality. You need the passion for stand-up comedy. I don't know what these people... Comedy needs to be redefined. That's the problem we have going on across fucking America. It ain't just in New Orleans. This isn't fucking America.
I mean, genres of... just like we have rock and roll and rap, you know?
Right, you know what I mean? Comedy has no... It's just comedy, and people think all of it's the same shit, and that's...
Used to be like Def Comedy Jam, where they're all doing the same kind of style.
Same kind of fucking style, like back to back to back to back or some shit. And you,
what, motherfuckers?
Hamburger, you know what I'm saying? Hamburger was cool. That's what made him different. That's what made him stand out on fucking Def Comedy Jam, because he had the fucking Hamburger. But he was still telling the same kind of jokes as everybody else, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't the same
what
jokes.
What are you talking about?
Hamburger. You know, I forgot the first and last name, but he called himself Hamburger.
Oh, okay.
Just Google Hamburger, and Google Hamburger will come up, and he'll be telling jokes at Def Comedy Jam. He's funny, but he's telling the same jokes, really. You know what I mean? Yeah. Motherfuckers stand out. If you put 10 Comedy Central specials on, you know what I'm saying, back to back to back, you're going to think you're listening to the same motherfucker all day, unless that dude with the fucking dummies get up there. And then you'd be like, oh, shit, there's something different going
on.
Right. You know what I'm saying? But
so what if it what if you just had 3 white comics and then a white comic with a dummy shows up? Does that count as a black comic?
Because he has diversity. He counts as the minority, and he will get...
Because he's got
I will bump
thing.
One of those
right.
comics, because he counts as
there is a
diversity.
System.
He counts as anything diverse.
Yeah.
Women, anything that's not the average of the majority. Like, if I had 7 fucking black comics there and a white guy showed up, he would be going for it.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
Smack, put him in the middle of that shit. You know what I'm saying?
313.
You know what I mean? We just gotta make it happen. It's just fucking... It's all about... People don't like seeing the same shit over and over.
Yeah.
And if they do like seeing the same shit over and over, 9 times out of 10, they just fucking corny as hell. And they're not gonna... They don't really want to see... They don't want to see the same shit over and over. They just fucking... Their brain is neutralized to, I gotta fucking... This is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the only way it's going to be. And so I'm going to enjoy this shit this way, because that's how it is. That's mm-hmm. how I like it this way. You know what I mean?
Well,
they're scared to laugh outside their comfort zone and shit.
I respect the way you handle yourself when people give you a little back talk outside. You know? You stand firm. You talk in ways that I appreciate.
People forget that I'm black.
Because
sometimes.
It's like dead confrontational. It's dead. This is how I think about everything. But you're not.
No.
You're not like passive. You would never smash someone on Facebook. You would never do. It's just like, this is exactly what I think. And we're talking about it right now, right to your face.
And I'm going to
this
go
is
tell
how
jokes.
I feel.
I'm going to hop on the stage in like 2 seconds
and now
I'm
gonna
go back to being regular old comedy. And then I'm going to come back out and cuss your ass out again. Because you fucking don't understand where I'm coming
but
from.
But then if someone is like, okay, yeah, I know what's going on. And then you talk about it. You'll talk about anything with anybody. It's not like you're writing people off or anything like that.
Because we want to find what makes people laugh and shit. Our ultimate goal and shit is to fucking, like, you know what I mean? If we kill comedy now, people ain't going to be laughing for the rest of their life and shit. We need to fucking, you know what I mean?
We got to keep this fucking torch.
We got to keep this shit going some kind of way. You know what I'm saying? And fucking, it's like... Like, sometimes you just gotta tell people, because, like Lauryn Hill said, you gotta add a motherfucker so ignorant niggas hate you. You know what I mean? You can be intelligent as hell, but if you're just sitting under the intelligence, if you don't say motherfucker one time, you're not gonna get those people who won't normally hear you fucking if you were just talking intelligence and shit. And sometimes got to stoop from your intelligent level and just get ignorant as hell and remind motherfuckers. Cause people forget I'm black sometimes, like the comics and shit, just people in general. Cause I'm always wearing my glasses and shit, and they're like, oh, he lived a nice life. He got both of his parents, you know what I'm saying? They moved out of the ghetto and they moved to the suburbs.
He reads
and shit. He's intellectual and shit. He won't
cuss me out all ignorant.
He won't get niggered in the morning. He won't let the nigga loose on me. That's not what he's gonna do and shit. You know what I mean? They forget. And I try to, you know what I mean? Nobody let nigga out on him. Letting the monkey out, like Red Bin Mews. Let the monkey out. Show these fools what you're all about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Nobody wants to do that shit. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to be that asshole. You know what I mean?
I don't want
to
go Jersey on people.
You just want
I don't want to go Jersey. But, you know, sometimes.
Sometimes you got to remind motherfuckers that you are still fucking somebody. You know what I mean?
Because, and if we do battle. Yeah, you can go on the left side. That's fine. You know, if we do battle with words, if I can blast these words out and they're better than yours and they make more sense,
you know what I mean?
That's what the fuck we're doing right now.
Because you can call me an asshole and a motherfucker a million times, and I will take that shit as plenty compliments, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right, I'll be that asshole and shit, as long as I'm telling you the exact truth and I'm not fading or telling you some fake shit. Like, I'm not telling you no phony shit. I'm telling you exactly what other people are fucking not telling you because you gave them a ride. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
I'm telling you exactly the fucking truth. And if you coming through this motherfucker, ain't been here in forever, and you got a problem with when you go up, you ain't been here in forever. So why should I stop? Why should I stop the show because you showed up? It ain't like you ain't been here forever because you've been fucking working on some shit that we should all
no,
stop
No, he was
and
on the
respect.
Road. He was on the road.
He was literally on the road and shit, like right when you get off the fucking interstate.
Glory holes.
On the Cleveland Bridge and shit.
He was on the road.
Right on the end of the
Wasn't
road.
Wasn't doing any comedy, but...
Motherfuckers, man. All
right, buddy.
I can't run this by myself. I gotta trust the people that do this shit. That's your show.
I'm not gonna take it around.
I
like I told you about fucking the other shit.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's your show. I don't fucking. That's your show. But what I do is I let them talk to me. All right. No, I hear you. Right. I see how that could have been abrasive. Well, go ahead and call me. I do that. I'm not gonna tell them to fuck off because then they're gonna
I'll
do what?
Tell them to fuck
no,
off.
You, right. Them. You do that. But if I tell them to fuck off, you know what they're gonna do? They're gonna try to talk to her. And we don't want that. Because if she get involved, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I don't
want
that.
She tried to please
I don't want that. Right. I want them to think, I'm listening to you. I'm going to do something about that. And then 5 years from now.
I never looked at the filter aspect of it. But that's kind of.
No, he's the manager. He vents about you.
Yeah, 5 years from now when the shit still ain't. Oh, hey.
So I can piss people off and they just talk to Christian and shit.
Right.
Yeah.
You could do that all day.
And then he'll listen to you.
I'm good.
He'll listen to you.
I'm good.
All right.
That's what I'm for.
Boudreaux and Piku are walking down the causeway.
Why these two Creole people?
And they're about 100 years old each.
Piku's black.
Boudreaux and Piku.
Light skin.
Oh, Jesus.
And as they're walking down the causeway, a big hop toad jumps in front of them.
You don't say.
And they got their big overcoats and Boudreaux reaches down and he picks up the hop toad and the toad says, I appear to be a toad, but in fact I am a beautiful princess who has been magically transformed into the likeness of a toad.
It's a Disney movie.
And if you will kiss me, I will be transformed back into a princess. And if you will do that, I will suck you and fuck you like a Superman for the rest of your life. And Boudreaux looks
at the toad. He just came in for that bit. Okay, go on.
And he puts it into his pocket. And Boudreaux and Piku keep walking down the causeway. And Piku says, hey, Boudreaux, ain't you going to kiss that dead toad? He says, well, I don't know. At my age, I might prefer to have a talking toad.
Wow. Yeah, he acted it out and everything.
Wow. He put his beer down. I appreciate the delivery.
It was all about the delivery.
Yeah. Preparation.
Sometimes.
It's the journey. It's the journey. Podcast continues. Sitting here. I did a segment earlier with Jackie last week.
Yeah.
So I think I'm just going to have a couple people on this episode and shit. All right. Sitting here with Tom Jones.
All right. Nice to be here.
Homa Comic. Well, not Homa. Where are you from?
Booty.
Booty. So you're up from Louisiana. You're from here?
Yes, born and raised.
Now, you were telling me an interesting story that you kind of, when you first... Do you mind if I talk about this? You had, like, there was a little scandal regarding your comedy.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So what exactly happened with that?
I'll start by saying this. When I got into comedy, I started doing comedy when I was 14. And it was just something that from the day I knew what a comedian was, it's something that I've always wanted to do.
I'm the same way.
And I wrote jokes, and I was performing at, you know, fucking school talent shows, you know, at little, you know, places where other kids were, and I had to do, you know, kid-friendly jokes. And then I started moving up. You know, I got older, I started being able to go to New Orleans more, I had a car, I could go anywhere. And my first semester of college, scratch that, second semester, when I was pretty heavy in the scene, you know, I got lazy, and I'll admit that. And I let things slip past me. And, you know, I'll admit that I did steal jokes. I was, you know, doing other comedians' jokes.
Just in the scene, like local guys or bigger guys?
Sometimes it was a mixture of both. Sometimes it was just like, I remember one of my big thing, one of the biggest things that, you know, if you ask somebody here, they say, you know, I was stealing from Mike Birbiglia. And what had happened was when I was in school, I wrote this joke. And it essentially went, I went out with this girl and she was really nice. And we were going back up to her room. And she was about to invite me in. She's like, I trust you. You're a really nice guy. And, you know, I don't think that, you know, you would try and hurt me. And I said, well, you don't know that. And at the time, when I wrote it, I really thought I had wrote it. And then later on, you know, I think I did it for, I think, you know, my little brother heard me do that, or he saw, like, it on my notebook. He's like, this sounds familiar. And I was like, what? And then he kind of pulled it up on the internet. It was a Mike Birbiglia joke. Mm. And it's where he's helping this woman put a bed into her apartment, and she says, no, he's trying to get a bed into his apartment, and he didn't have the key to open the door, so the woman opened the door, and she said, I trust you because a rapist wouldn't have a bed like that. And he said, well, you'd be surprised.
Right.
And, you know, at the time, like I said, I had gotten lazy. And I feel like I had gotten addicted just to being on stage and having people, you know, laugh and clap.
Right. Once you figured out kind of what worked, then you would go,
yeah,
okay, maybe I'll just take that and that'll work. No, that'll get laughs.
It was more of, you know, because the thing was, I was doing the joke before I realized that I had stole it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I realized that I did, you know, and it's real cheap, I was just like, you know, they don't know that.
Mm. How old were you when you did this?
I was 19.
Yeah, I mean, 19.
I mean, yeah, when you're young, you do shitty things. And I always used to complain when I was 18 and 19. And
right.
I was like, you know, it sucks that you can't do anything until you're 21. And then I realized why. Even when you're 18, you're still not a grown-up. You're still a piece of shit. You think that when you're 18, you think that you can get away with things under the guise of, well, I'm an adult now. And, you know, it doesn't matter.
It's actually
matter.
The opposite. That's when, like, murder sticks. That's when you, like, get the death penalty. It's not like you get off. No, now you're an adult, so you're fucking in the fucking system. And a lawyer can go, he's an adult. He knew what he was doing when he was drunk and driving, running over that girl. You know?
Yeah, you're right on that one. Yeah, I'll give you that one.
So.
But yeah, and right now I really hope that, you know, if anyone is listening to this that, you know, has negative connotations of me, you know, when I was still doing this in the scene, you know, I like to apologize to everybody. You know, I know it's cheap. I know it was childish. And right now I'm working really hard to, you know, come up with my own stuff.
So how long has it been since you've stolen a joke? I mean, what was the low point where you're like, I can't do this anymore? And then you went straight and you were like, okay, I'm writing all my own shit now.
I think the lowest point was I had done a show at Siberia, and one of the comic that was hosting the show, I'm not going to say the name, I know they had a problem with me. And as I was getting on the stage, as, you know, they were announcing me to get on the stage, they said, this next comedian, I think he's a fan of Mike Birbiglia. And I knew exactly what they were trying to say. They were like, yeah, you did that.
Right.
And for me, when that happened, I had just turned 21. And I had stopped doing comedy when I was 20 for a while. Because, 19, 20. Because of, you know, how, what I have done and, you know, how it was affecting me in the scene, how people looked at me. And I decided, you know, to wash my hands of it.
Right.
And I'm like, you know what, I'm going to leave. I'm going to bow out gracefully while I can, but I'm going to work on some stuff. And when I come back, I want to be just as powerful as I was when I got in.
Mm.
And
it was almost like you were learning the craft of performing. If you had a good joke, then you would, like, let me learn how to perform jokes perfect. I think that was almost, like, your goal before it was, like, being, like, a comic. Like, you were, like, building that skill, and it didn't matter. And you just like killing so much that it didn't matter that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like I said, how long ago was that when you were at Siberia?
Sometime last year, honestly. Mm-hmm. And it was just at that moment where I was just like...
So like 9 months ago or...
Yeah, I'll say about 9 months. And that was the point where I was like, you know what? If they're just gonna keep this on them, you know, not give me the benefit of the doubt, not let me try and redeem myself, then I don't really care.
Right.
You know, I'm just gonna go up there and the people that, you know, choose to stay by my side, people that, you know, choose to, you know, cheer me on, and the people that choose to, you know, forgive me for what I've done, you know, they're the people I'm doing this for.
Right. I know what that's like, son.
Yep.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers to that.
Yeah, man. It is weird because it's like sometimes just a story in your life can get so out of control that, like, when 9 people see you, you think that that's what they're thinking, and it probably is what they're thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's kind of like, well, there's more to me than just this, like, one story or this one thing that happened or this one, you know, like, where's the chance to be like, yo, I fucked up.
Yeah,
instead
exactly.
Of, like, isn't that pretty powerful? And, like, how many people who are going after you when they fuck up go, yeah, I fucked up.
Exactly.
For other shit. You know, we're all fucked up. Yeah. We all make mistakes. We all, you know, while we're trying to define the bounds of what we're going on, we're always going to be pushing the boundaries. I'm saying in other terms of how people can get in trouble with comedy.
Yeah.
And, you know, just saying stuff that's offensive to one person, saying stuff that's offensive to a group of people. You know, people can get really pissed off because you are pushing buttons, because we're dealing with ideas and we're trying to, in my mind, in the highest sense, we're trying to alchemize pain into joy. And if you can take whatever is that you fear and you put it in a little box and then you make it into a jack-in-the-box with a midget who gets his dick sucked, that's a funny joke, and then that takes the pain away. You know,
yeah.
All this stuff about trigger words. I said this in class the other day. It's like, well, trigger words. Sometimes trigger words are the only fucking words that dig deep enough to where the pain is to bring it out. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, black comics and the N-word. You know, I feel like they can say whatever they want. And if they're called that, then it's totally legit. And maybe if they feel like society holds them down, the only way to scratch that itch of how much it sucks is to say it all the time.
Exactly.
And take its power back and take it as something that's not negative on you. It's something that punctuates something so funny that joy comes out of something, you know?
Yeah.
Can't focus interest groups like feminists, other groups like that, LBGT. Look, gay guys are really funny and they know about this and they talk crazy shit all the time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, gay guys are just, it's just like when you see them and they're being extremely flamboyant and silly, you just want to laugh at them.
Yeah.
And then you want to make fun of them. Not so much make fun of them, but you just want to be like, look, guys, let me tell you about this gay guy that I saw that was being really silly.
But
and then they're like, yo, you're being so mean. It's like, no, he was silly before I got there.
Well, I also think that a bunch of gay guys, they bust each other's balls all the time, too. Like, oh my God, that is such a slut and all this stuff. It's fun. It's fun hanging out and talking candidly with other people.
Yeah.
And like short bursts of like what would seem to be inappropriate, but if they're your friend and they let you get away with it, then there's that like weird bond that goes on where it's like, oh shit, you're allowed to say that in front of me now. It's fun, you know.
And you say that, I completely agree. You know, I feel that sometimes it's like it's funny to be inappropriate, and me and my friends. I live, the area in which I live, as for anybody that's listening that can't tell, I'm actually a black man.
They'll see the picture.
There's going to be a picture. Well, yeah, I am a black man. And
Tom Jones. Black man.
Not unusual.
Here you go.
And when I was growing up, a majority of the people that lived around me, they, you know, spoke a certain way. They listened to a certain kind of music. And, you know, they felt a certain way. And that's just not how I felt. You know, growing up, I always thought it was weird how the black kids tended to hang out with the black kids, you know, and the white kids tended to hang out with the white kids.
Right.
And then when I would go hang out with the black kids, it was just like I wasn't clicking with them. You know, they were talking about Ja Rule and Mystical. And I had just discovered Nirvana. And yeah, dude, that's what it was like when I was little. I liked my dad. There's not a lot I could say about my dad. I mean, I knew my dad, but he's a piece of shit, and I don't like him. And there's not a lot of stuff that I could say he did for me. But one thing that I could say that, you know, I admire about him is his taste in music. My dad listened to everything from Willie Nelson to Johnny Cash, to N.W.A., Public Enemy, fucking Earth, Wind & Fire, Nirvana, Elvis. He introduced me to so much music.
And that opened your mind in different ways.
And it definitely opened my mind to different you know, feelings and different ways I saw people. When I thought it was crazy when I was listening to rap when I was little, and it was just like, shake your ass, watch yourself. And then I would listen to Public Enemy, and it would be like, fight the power. I'm like, what happened to the message?
Right, right.
You know, what happened to our frame of thinking? And like I said, you know, and it was just weird growing up. And then I discovered, and I never really found a true place I fit. You know, I was always in cliques because I was in football, I was in wrestling, I was in choir, I was in drama. So through high school, I just skated by different people. And it was until, you know, I graduated high school and I met my group of friends now, that, you know, I really found a group of people that whenever they, like, our big thing is, you know, you gotta be inappropriate. Because whatever people find that's offensive or, you know, it's wrong, we try and push that boundary to make you see this is how silly that what is wrong with you.
Right.
This is why it's so. Like, I remember once we were we went to a restaurant, and it was a nice place. I didn't realize how nice it was. I met them there, and I think I was just wearing blue jeans. I was wearing a Bob Marley shirt, and you know, just I think I was wearing sandals. Yeah, I was bumming it that day real hard. And as I walked in, I sat next to them, and they're all in their, you know, khaki pants and button-up shirts. And my friend Cody, he gets real close, and he's like, dude, I don't think they're serving niggers here tonight. And I just remember dying laughing so hard. Because it's just, it's ridiculous. Like, this is the way what he said and how he said it.
There were
and
just
why.
No black people in there?
There were just no black people. He's like, yeah, there are no niggers in here. And I was just like, why, dude? And I believe that, well, I hate all these things like, oh, you can't say this word, you can't say that word, you can't do this, can't do that. And it's like, dude, you can do whatever you want. I'm sorry that words hurt you.
Yeah.
You know?
That is the thing about trigger words, because it's kind of like if you say rape jokes or if you do this or that, then some people take things certain ways. But also it's like, you know, if you go to therapy, the therapist is going to be like, yo, so tell me about that rape and stuff. You know, and they're going to make you go
like
through
that.
It.
Just like that.
I don't know what
tell
doctors
Tell me about
did.
That rape and stuff, bruh.
How did that feel? Right? Okay, and then what happened? I mean, what the fuck? That's what you're doing in there. You're crying. You're talking about it. You're getting it off your chest. That's like the starting point. And then from there, it's like, okay, how are you feeling and stuff like that. I don't know what it is. Yeah. Therapy. I don't know. Maybe they just drug them and say, get out of here. Silly. Your women's problems, you know? No, I'm just joking.
Oh, my.
Totally joking.
And but I think it's crazy because, like, whenever you hear, usually whenever I hear rape jokes, I've never, you know, really heard anybody that, you know, say any where they're making fun of victims. You know, it's always about rapists and how crazy they are and how dumb they are and how insane.
Yeah, what's the context of what you're talking about? Maybe you're taking a rapist and putting it in a little jack-in-the-box and then and throwing a cake at it. That's very empowering.
Yeah, I think it was a George Carlin joke, and he said, if you don't think rape is funny, imagine Porky Pig raping Elmer Fudd. And like,
it's pretty funny.
Yeah. And I thought, and it kind of made sense. It was just like, if I can put enough spin, I can make something that seems so horrible just laughable.
Right.
And for that 1 second, the evils of the world are nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Sorry about that. Hold on. Let me.
All right. Take care of some business.
Yeah. All right. What do you want? Yeah. I mean, it doesn't start till a while. All right, look, let me call you back. I'm kind of doing a podcast right now.
Is that Brandon?
All right, bro. Okay. Bye. No, that was my older brother.
Oh, okay. Brandon Phillips is coming by. Yeah. He might get a little recording session in as well. Let's talk with him. He's a good guy, too.
Yeah.
Can I ask you this? What's the writing process been like in the last 9 months as far as, like, getting motivation to do sets and enjoying writing material and kind of figuring out how to do it like that, you know?
Writing, it's kind of been based off of, every night, you know, I work full time now. So the only time, you know, I really have to myself is around, you know. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, I'm just wondering if you're done with it, because I have more.
Okay, but every night around 7 o'clock, you know, I kind of force myself to sit down and, you know, really write. I don't care. And really, it's write anything. I write, you know, poetry. Or, you know, I'll try and write jokes, I'll try and write a short story, I'll write a rhyme, yeah. You know, just, I'll do whatever I can just to get, like, expressions out. And at one point, like, I could be writing a song for my band.
Yeah.
And then, like, I'll get on a tangent about something in my head and I'll be like, oh, that'd be a little funny joke. Or I'll be writing a joke and then, you know, I'll think of something and I'll be like, oh, wow, I'm kind of developing this story a little bit more than I should for this joke. let me try write a little short story with that, see where that goes.
Yeah.
And I feel like the more you just kind of keep your mind going, bouncing off of each other, at some point, you know, you're going to hit gold. Mm. And it's just been about what do I find funny that I feel other people, you know, would like to listen to. When I do comedy, yeah, that was weird. Because I didn't want to burp loud.
Right. So you just like silently went, shh.
Yeah, I was just like, get it out. But when I listen to comedy, or the way I listen to comedy, is I'm listening to it so I can hear that person's experiences in life.
Right.
I want to hear their story. And that's why I will admit, you know, my favorite comedian or one of my favorite comedians to listen to when, you know, I was starting out was, you know, Mike Birbiglia. Because I felt like the way he painted stories with his words, they were just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I try and write my stuff is, you know, I'm telling you what it's like to live a day in the life of Thomas Jones.
Right.
And this is what I think about. This is what, you know, I do. This is what happens to me sometimes. And, you know, hopefully they like the little adventure, the little 10-minute, 5-minute adventure I bring them on, you know.
Let me bring you on a little adventure. I had something interesting happen to me last night. I hosted a party for my friend Amir. He's from Yemen. Mm-hmm. He put the party on in the apartment, you know, my roommate and stuff. And it was pretty crazy. But someone basically, you know, at the end of the party, you're trying to wrap it up and you're like, okay, now it's over.
Yeah.
And you have to be like, okay, but now leave though. And like this one dude, like nobody knew him, right? He showed up. I said, please leave now. I opened brownie. I was like putting stuff away. I was putting food away. The brownies specifically. Yeah. And he goes, oh, you're going to wrap that up? He takes half of it like a spider monkey. Eats all the brownies. Takes another, just like holds him in his pocket. And then I'm like, okay, leave now. And then he's like, but let me use the bathroom first. He goes around to the bathroom. He's in there for like 20 minutes. He finally comes out and then he's like, okay, but can we change the music? I'm like, leave! Leave! Nobody knows. Who is this guy? And like he was like trying to stay and like in the house as long as possible and like keep getting free beers and stuff.
He's
like,
probably homeless.
Dude, I don't know. No, I think he's just like, there's always that like...
A butcher.
No, this is on the UNO campus. Like he's there. I think he definitely studies there, but it's always like the friend of a friend of a friend. He's like, yo, I'm shacking up here.
Or what if he was just that one guy that walked by, saw a party, and he's just like, yeah, I'm going to hang out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't have any friends. I want to be cool with people.
Yeah, but... brutal. It is weird. I don't know. And you know, it's like, you don't want to be rude in that scenario, but it's like, dude.
I mean, you got it.
I told you 5 times to leave, you know? And then he's like filling his pockets with brownies.
Like, dude. And then he went to the bathroom with like a brownie, pockets in his brownies.
Yeah.
Like just a pocket full of brownies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a little shitty.
And then, I don't know if he's peeing, and then he's just, like, staring at himself in the mirror for a while, splash water in his face.
Like, all I could imagine was he just sat in there and ate brownies for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Just let me
let me plan my next move. Yeah. I'll definitely sleep here. Like,
think about what I'm going to do next. If I stay here long enough, they'll forget.
I think that they still have a half a bottle of vodka left over. I can put that down my pants. I can steal the cheese. I can get the grapefruit in the fridge. So that's cool. It's a little day in the life, you know. Oh, and also, speaking of gay guys, you know, one guy like kept asking me about the music, right? Kept asking me, oh, you know, I don't like this music. No, I don't like, whose cell phone is it? I don't like, you know, I kept dealing with this issue over and over again. And on one of the rounds, he tried to kiss me.
Oh.
I was like, dude. Like, he was just like, no, but I want to change the music. Just, like, cap leaning in. And I was like, what do you think this is, man?
This is...
Ugh.
Oh, when
that's
I was...
That's hosting a party, you know.
I'll tell you a story about that. When I was, in my... So, like I said, I live in Bootsy, Louisiana. And what Bootsy is, it's Farm Walmart Swamp, Troy Landry from Swamp People. And it's just nothing to do there. It's just, we recently got a Cane's, so that means, like, we're making it right
you
now.
You got fried chicken or something.
Yeah, we got, yeah, at least we got fucking Cane's.
Do they sell burgers?
At Cane's?
Yeah.
No, strictly chicken fingers.
Okay.
Oh, chicken fingers.
I haven't had them.
It's actually pretty good.
Do they make sandwiches or it's just chicken fingers?
Well, it's the chicken fingers on a bun.
In a sandwich?
Yeah.
Can you get them just straight up?
Yeah.
Or they'll wrap them in a sandwich. Same exact chicken.
I mean, yeah, it's all...
Is it like a patty versus a finger?
No, it's all fingers. Same thing. All fingers.
Okay. It's either in a bun or it ain't.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, so, like, you know, we're just kids with nothing to do. We're only 30 minutes from the city. So, when I was... How old was I? I want to say I was 17. 17, 16. Me and my friends, we drove out to the city. We found... We were with, you know, our friends who were hot. And we went out to bars. We were trying to get into every bar, but every bar we got kicked out. Because, you know, we weren't old enough.
Right. And so you went with hot girls?
Yeah.
To, like, get in there?
Yeah, we were trying to, like you know, you walk on the arm with a hot girl, and they're just like, okay, yeah, you go.
Right,
in.
Right, right.
But, you know, they would let the girl go in, and they'll be like, whoa, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of them, they kind of just, like, they almost didn't believe, like, I knew who this girl was. Like, I paid her a little bit. Like, hey, look, let me just hold on to you until we get in.
Can I tell you something? When I was 18, I really didn't get carded in fucking New York City, man. It was a different time back then.
I mean, but you probably had this thick-ass beard like you do now.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you just walk in looking like a man. I got this itty-bitty old baby face. I still get carded.
It's a blessing and a curse having a beard. Like having a baby face, you know?
I could never grow a beard. I want to try, but, you know, it's just not working. It comes out a little patchy.
Well, you know, we can... spend many minutes talking about how great my beard is, but I'm not sure it would register, you know, on the podcast.
But like I said, we were getting kicked out. We got kicked out of every club, and then we get to St. Anne, and at this point I'm just like, I just want to get drunk. I don't care where we go. And they let us into the Oz, and are people going to get in trouble if they hear this? Fuck it, I don't care.
Don't use names. Don't use dates. Or don't... I have a law degree. It's in a train station somewhere in Texas. In a locker.
In a locker somewhere.
I have a doctor degree in, like, I think San Antonio in a train station locker. It's there somewhere. So I have credentials to speak about this.
Well, we get into the eyes. And... I'm just drinking vodka straight up. I'm sitting at the bar. I don't want to move. Because, you know, I'm 16 and dumb. I'm like, ugh, gay people. They all want to hit on me.
Right, right.
You know? And then one of my friends comes downstairs, Corinne, her name. She's just like, hey, they're doing karaoke upstairs.
Yeah.
And they knew I was in choir. They knew I could sing. They knew I liked to sing. I'm like, I'm not fucking singing karaoke in a gay bar. And then they just bought me shots, and I'm like, let's sing some karaoke.
And yeah, so the gay bar was like, yeah, we don't mind if this underage kid comes here. We don't care if he just got off a bus from wherever the fuck he's from, and he's gonna fucking get drunk and explore being gay and shit.
I just gave her a night.
They just opened the doors to you immediately.
Just immediately.
They're right.
And this is like a, and it was a weeknight, so the night where nobody cares.
Yeah.
You know, where... Right, right. I went to go to school the next day hungover. It's totally cool.
Okay, are you finished? Keep going.
I went up there and I sang 1,000 Miles by Vanessa Carlton.
Yeah?
And when I got off stage, there's this guy and he was just like, hey man, that was really good. And I was like, oh, dude, thanks. He's like, dude, you want to let me buy you a drink? And I'm like, okay, yeah, cool. So I'm sitting by the bar, and I'm talking to him, and, you know, I drink the drink. And then he's like, you know, do you stay around here? And I'm like, oh, no. He's like, well, I stay close, you know, maybe. And then he puts his hand on my knee, and then I was just like, oh.
Right.
I know what this is.
And red light.
Like, yeah. And it was just this awkward moment where I didn't want to be mean.
Right.
But I can't just be like, yeah, let's do this. And like,
Right.
So I was just like, oh, I'm sorry. But he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And he got up and he left. And I just, to this day, I'm like, I think I fucked that guy over, like, real good. Like, I think he fell in love with me.
Right.
And just knowing that he couldn't have me.
Yeah, it was like being a hot chick for a day. Like, yeah. What do they go through?
I know. And it
was they're just constantly being barraged with hands on the knees, deep look in the eye.
Like, let me buy you drinks.
Let's do this, you know? So what did it feel like just to be looked at like a piece of meat?
I don't know. Like, I've always said, for all the feminists out there, and then one thing that I never understood, and I mean, I kind of do, but it's weird, but it's the whole thing where women, like, they say, I don't like it when guys compliment me on the street.
That's a big problem in their lives.
Yeah, it's a big problem. You know, they're like, you know,
it's kinda a big problem. They got problems.
And then, like, guys always say, I wish girls would compliment me on the street, tell me how good I'm looking. And
that is a valid perspective.
And, yeah, it's a valid perspective, and it's because it always happens to women because, you know, men, naturally, it's in our DNA to mate with the most attractive woman and, you know, make strong babies that will live. And they will, you know, fuck attractive women.
Right.
And, you know, raise strong babies. And it's just, it's, for us, you know, it's just natural, you know, when guys are just like, hey, you look beautiful. Because it's just like, I think you're attractive and I need to spread my seed right now.
Yeah.
And it's just, if girls, if there was, I think if for 1 year, girls would, you know, catcall guys. Like, guys can't call girls. I do think guys would just be like, I just really wish I could walk down the street and these girls would not, you know, just leave me alone. And right now, you just can't get mad at men because they say, I wish people would compliment me on the street because they just don't know what it feels like. It happens sometimes, but not enough for it to become a problem.
Right. I don't think also, you know, I was in Tulane earlier spreading flyers and stuff about my roast battle show, which is happening March 22nd and April 19th. April 19th, look forward to that show at the La Nuit Comedy Theater. Doors open 7:30, 8 p.m. But I was at Tulane earlier, you know, distributing flyers and stuff. I don't think girls realize that. When I'm sitting somewhere or when I'm doing posting flyers, right, in a room, and an attractive girl walks in, my testicles start boiling. I'm not kidding. Like, it's a pheromone thing, or you go, oh, all of a sudden, yeah, there's a hottie in the room. All of a sudden, there's a physiological response. I'm not saying I get a boner. What I'm saying is you feel like your balls are bubbling and they start producing testosterone.
Yeah.
You know, same thing, you know. So it's just like this little bull. So, like, imagine if you had an apparatus on your body that could impregnate the entire planet's worth of the opposite sex in one lifetime. It was just a constant yogurt dispenser. Imagine how fucked up your brain would be.
Yeah.
And then imagine our plight. Because it's not easy being this horny as a man, you know?
Yeah.
Just like constantly loads need to get drained out so I feel like halfway normal. So I have to look at weird pornography, you know? I don't want to have to do that, but I have to do a medical procedure on myself so I'm not a spider monkey in class. grabbing fucking brownies off the desk and ruffling up the professor's hair, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Just I have to get rid of my load just so I have a certain social decorum, right?
Right.
So that's a burden.
It's like I gotta drain the main valve before we have an explosion.
Otherwise, you just feel completely insane.
Yeah, you can't.
That is why Catholicism is so weird. It's like, oh, you know that your like yogurt dispenser that's constantly leaking no matter what you do. If you just fall asleep and you don't masturbate, you'll have a wet dream. If you touch that, you're going down. Like, are you crazy? Are you crazy? All right, go on.
You know, it's funny that you say that. When I was growing up, I was an altar boy at my church.
Oh. Can I ask you another question that I asked you earlier?
Go for it.
How did it feel like just to be like viewed as a piece of meat?
And you know what? I always say, well, you know, my priest was cool. And then, you know, I'm pretty sure altar boy said that like right before they got
caught. He was cool. He took you to baseball games. He gave you candy. He took you to the horse track and bet on horses. He always let you sit on his lap in the Cadillac.
He let me drive his car.
He gave you booze. And the Quaaludes. No, he was cool. Like, he was a cool guy. I got sleepy at his house a couple times. He gave me fresh pajamas. I was showered when I woke up. It was weird. But it was nice, you know?
Yeah, my shoes were on the wrong feet, you know?
I have one dream he was sucking my toes. I don't know if that's real. Just putting peanut butter on my feet. I don't know if that's real. Great guy. Cool guy. You know, give you booze. Quaaludes. Anyway. I don't want to spread a rumor here. I don't want to disparage his character.
I was not molested by my priest.
Right.
But I was an altar boy from, I think, when I was 12 years old to about when I was 16. And I think when I was 17, like, I just stopped going to church. Because not that I don't believe in God. It's just that I don't believe in, you know, the religion that I belong to. Because there are just so many dogmas that just don't make sense. And, right. You know, it really, you know, butts heads with, you know, my moral standings and my dilemmas.
Right.
So, you know, it's been a while since, you know, I've been to church. When I was 20, I had hit a rough spot. And, you know, I felt, you know, I just got arrested for possession of marijuana. I was, you know, I dropped out of college.
Where were you going?
I went to Southeastern.
Mm-hmm.
And Southeastern was nice. It was a nice little program. But, you know, I just realized that school wasn't my thing. And I either had to figure out what I was going to do or soldier on. And, you know, when you go to school and you're failing, you're essentially paying to fail.
Right.
So, you know, I don't want to, you know, have to put my mom through that, especially she's trying to, you know, put my younger brother into college, you know? So yeah. I decided, you know, maybe it's right now I just got to bow out.
Right.
And, you know, I was just feeling low. And then one day I was just like, you know what? Let me get back with God. Let me at least pay him a visit, you know, have a conversation and see where it goes from there. So I went to my church and, you know,
just take him out on a date. Like,
yeah.
Take yourself, you know, to a,
tag him, you know, friend him on Facebook, invite him over.
Go on.
You know, we poke each other.
Yeah.
Just see where it goes. Just see what's going on with God. Just broke up with my ex. Let's see what God's doing.
Oh, the croissants are great here, God.
So I go to church and, you know, I pray for a little bit. And as I'm leaving, I see my priest. And, you know, he asks me what's going on. I catch him up with everything. And, you know, you're never going to tell your priest. I don't care who you are. Even when you're in confession, you don't tell your priest the worst things you do.
Right.
Because, you know, he has to look at you someday and be like, oh, God. Right. He does that stuff.
Right.
You know, and they say, oh, you know, we don't judge. I'm pretty sure you judge, motherfucker.
I always think about the CIA network of priests listening to confessions of businessmen, politicians everywhere. They would start to have a web of confessions from different high-level sources of their wrongdoings and have blackmail file for which that they can,
damn,
push.
That'd be
I don't know if that's true. I don't know if any of that's true.
But all, you know.
It's going to come out one day.
Reporting requirements to the Vatican. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, you can't just pass up all this juicy information.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I talked to my priest and, you know, he just said, well, we're doing this little assembly tomorrow if you want to come and help out. If you want to speak to this kid, you want to speak to the kids, because I know how well of a speaker you are. And, you know, I know that because you're close to their age, they're going to listen to you. So I was like, okay, what's this seminar about? And they're like, abstinence. And I was just like, fuck. Mm. I don't want to tell my priest about all the things that I get into. So I'm just like, you know what? Yeah, I'll talk to these kids. And
so you were in charge of talking to kids about abstinence.
Yes.
And what did you tell them?
I got into the room and, you know, at first I started talking, and then you can see the kids and they're like fidgeting and then,
right,
you know, and then they're older boys are
just horny. One of them's humping a stuffed animal in the corner.
They're
just going
crazy. And there are moms in the room because, you know, dads don't want to, you know, go to church and help out for anything.
Right.
And then I was just like, excuse me, all the older women, if you could step out, because this is going to get, you know, kind of personal. And I don't think, you know, these boys are comfortable with you in the room. And then they're like, okay. So they left. So I was like, okay, guys, straight up, sex is not a bad thing. They tell you to wait before they tell you to wait to marriage because they don't want you impregnating everybody. As long as you're smart about this, use a condom, you know, make sure you get consent, and, you know, find somebody that you really do love, you know. Don't just go out there having sex to have sex. Find somebody that you really care about.
No, just put it in a thing that you would never, ever do or think about. Yeah. And then it definitely won't have more power over you later. AKA trigger words.
Exactly.
Let's just put all this stuff in a box where we never think about sex at all. Abstinence. Because sex thoughts aren't racing through your fucking 13-year-old brain every 5 seconds. Can I tell you that I sat behind a girl when I took my SATs who was very sweaty, had little booty shorts on, and I think I lost like 600 points as a result. You know?
Yeah.
And like, I mean, it's just, she would like adjust herself on like the seat in front of me, and then like her shorts would like roll up. Like, roll up a half an inch, and it was, like, really hot. You know what I mean? Side tit. Anyway, listen. This isn't about side boob right now. This is about Tom Jones and his comedy career.
Yeah, of course it is. My comedy career.
Is that the best kind of tit, side tit, Tom Jones?
You know what?
It's a good view.
It's a nice little view. But right. I think, you know, because I've been in New Orleans too long.
Right.
I've grown accustomed to
the double booby flash.
No, just the full-on tit, but no nipple. Pasty.
The pasty look.
The pasty, yeah. There you go.
All the burlesque dancers. All the burlesque.
To me, that is so sexy. It's like, yeah, it's like they start off with the side boob, and I'm like, yeah. And then they get to the pasty, and I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if that pasty were to come off, it would just been, I would have lost my shit.
Yeah. It's almost like what you can't see and what you imagine. Like, that pasty just popping off.
Oh, yeah.
Which exactly. is illegal, because if you're just a club, you can't have nipples in your club. So that's why the burlesque dancer developed the tassel, because it's like, we ain't showing no nips.
So we're not naked, technically.
So we're not naked.
Can't I'm bust
this,
us.
Yo, check this loophole twirling around. Not naked, you know? Well, I like how laws inform wardrobes. I like when that happens, you know?
Isn't there, like, this new fine that they're trying to do where if your pants are down, like, they could fine you, like, $50 or some shit?
Really? Like, if you take your dick out? Every time you take your dick out, that's $50?
Nah.
I would go bankrupt on Snapchat and chat roulette. I'd be bankrupt. $50?
God damn it.
Every time I got my pants down?
You know what? If they did initiate, you know, the whole, you know, every time you send a picture of your dick, that's a $50 email.
Like a tax?
Yeah, like a tax. Like every a
dick
time.
Like kind of like tobacco and cigarettes.
Yeah, like exactly. Every time you send a dick pic, that's $50.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that would cut down on all these girls just being like, there are too many dicks on my phone.
Well, then it would be like really mixed signals because it's like, I got $50, but I didn't want to see that dick. I feel like a text whore. I got paid $50 to look at a dick, and then I went, ew. Just that. And then there would be totally a porno of just, like, reaction videos of dicks that girls didn't want to see. Ew. And, like, slow down on their ew face. And people everywhere all over the internet making GIFs of that and being off. No, I don't like that.
I think that's weird.
Guys, like, are weird.
Guys are so weird. As, like...
Have I described how weird guys are?
Guys are terrible. Like, as the world goes on, like, we just learn new things that we find attractive. Yeah. Like, let me tell you something. I like,
and it's never for the better. It's always like a dark progression into the unknown, into the vast wilderness of sexual depravity.
It's always horrible.
That's where the bell curve is always going. Wherever you start from porno-wise, it always ends up in the same place. Decapitation videos.
There was a time where I'm, as a bigger guy, I'm into bigger girls. So
BBWs.
Yeah, the stereotype is true. I love big white girls.
Right.
My past three girlfriends have been big white girls.
Right.
And I remember there was a time where I was looking for porn that was like big white girl, big girls. And then for some reason, all the videos I found were of bigger women farting.
Yeah.
And
I like that stuff.
And what blew my mind, I was just like, you know what's weird is, like, if this was the only porn I could find of bigger women.
Yeah.
I think I would be into farting because then I would just have nowhere to go and I would just have to like this now.
Right, right. Because you, at least you get the ass shot. You definitely get the ass shot.
Yeah, you get the ass, which is the number one thing.
Right.
Like I said, stereotype is true.
You're an ass man.
Ass man, all the way.
BBWS man. Boom. Oh, look at those double hams just strutting in some yoga pants or something.
I just got to.
Just flexing. Look at that. Boom, boom, boom. There's some wobble to it.
I should be able to put my face in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, if I don't come up back up in, like, 30 seconds, send a rescue team.
Yeah, or don't. Put it on my gravestone. Went out fucking smiling like a champion.
Went out like an OG.
With a tuckus in my face.
I always thought that's how I wanted to die. Like, if I could die, like, just any... If you could say, Thomas, how do you want to die? I want a girl sitting on my face, bro.
Yeah.
And that's how I want to go out.
You're 65?
Yeah.
How old is the girl?
Did
you just come over in a shipping container? I don't mean that. I don't mean that. I don't mean that at all. But it's like the girls are cheap, but it's shipping is expensive. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I don't mean any of that. I don't know these things. I don't really know what I'm talking about.
I mean, well, I got an account for FedEx through my work. So, you know, I can, you know, use that account. And then, you know,
but I did look up how much it is to overnight 93 pounds.
Large box, contents, fragile.
Contents, Ukrainian. Okay. So I didn't look up any of this. That's the problem. Like, if someone later in the future, I wonder about, like, how thorough is the internet archive of our life? Because, like, someone could look at a timeline of my life, like, the minutes of my life, find this podcast, and also correspond it with the URLs. Like, if they knew my IP address, could they know every single website that I've been checking out and what I've been reading and all this stuff? And then correspond it to, you know what I mean?
I mean,
he did see how much.
He did. Like,
he did freight 93 pounds on FedEx overnight. You know? And he was looking at prices from the Ukraine. Like, could that happen? Like, could someone bust me to that level? I'm not guilty of that.
It's very possible, but...
But if I were to have been,
how
thorough in the future is everybody going to snoop? And where is all this information going? Why is the NSA making these giant external hard drives underground, recording everything that comes off the internet. What does that look like? Do you think about that ever? Like your location with your phone, GPS, you're always kind of being wired. Are you worried about that, Tom Jones?
I'm one of those people that is against everything government. Mm-hmm. Mainly because it's screwy and it's weird and I don't trust it. And I don't like how I have to, like, give my number whenever I go somewhere.
Right.
And the government, it's just like one day they're going to put chips in us all and then we're going to be under their control. It's about 10 o'clock.
Okay, yeah. Sure. We got plenty of time.
Yeah, we got time. Government shouldn't be trusted.
Yeah.
They do crazy shit, too. Did you know that at one point the government, they shipped money to Cuba? Well, they were funding a Cuban rap group in hopes that the rap group would cause an urban uprising and would overthrow their dictator government.
Yeah. You know, the weird thing about generals and the CIA and their overestimation about coup d'etats, anyone can make a bell graph. And they can plug into a computer some facts.
Yeah.
And they can go rock and roll plus civil unrest equals coup d'etat. Look at this bell curve. Yeah, we all know that when you multiply two numbers, they all of a sudden go exponential. Right? In a fucking Excel spreadsheet. That's what always happens. You get a curve that looks like this. And you can't always assume human behavior is going to be like, you know, screamo equals coup d'etat among like 16 to 20 year olds. Fucking CIA.
It's just ridiculous, man.
Bunch of coup d'etat fuckers. Fucking graphs. I made 3 coup d'etat Excel spreadsheets today. I work for the CIA. What are you doing? Get out of there. Why are you there? Why are you doing that? How about you just don't have that job and someone else is making a solar panel? Like, are we fucking... We're so retarded as a country.
We are. I mean, does it really matter what sites I go on to in a day?
Mm-hmm. Does it really matter, like, the level of depravity of the porno I watch? If the world was better, it wouldn't be that depraved out there.
Exactly.
And I would be whacking it to happier things.
We would still be whacking it to women's ankles.
Mm. I would still type in BBW, to be honest. Post-apocalyptic or pre. Pre-Katrina, post-Katrina, BBWs. Were you around for Katrina? You got any Katrina shit?
The story I have for Katrina was... My family left. We were with my older brother, my younger brother. It was me, my mom, my older brother, my little brother, and her boyfriend at the time. And we went to Mountain View, Arkansas, where there was no mountain and there was no view. And we stayed at this hotel. And, well, not hotel, motel. Mm-hmm. And while we were there, we realized that 5 other families there had left New Orleans for Katrina.
Right.
So we decide to go out one night and, you know, eat dinner together, mm-hmm. you know, talk and, you know, get to know each other. And they pushed all the tables together. You know, there's an adult table and there was like a kid table. I say kid, but it was more like, you know, just if you weren't, you know, paying the bills, you sat at this table.
Right.
So we were sitting down and there was this cute girl that was sitting next to me. And, you know, I must have been, when was Katrina? Katrina was
2005.
Yeah, I want to say I was like 15, 16.
Mm-hmm. All of a sudden your testosterone starts rising.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I started talking to her.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we got back to the hotel, she snuck out and she knocked on my door. She's like, yeah, I'm getting ready to go swimming. You want to come swimming? And I was just like, yeah. So we go swimming. And after we get out of the pool, we go by the ice machine. And she's like, I want to try something. And I'm like, what? And that was the first time I've ever gotten a blowjob.
Did you put ice in her mouth?
No, she didn't put ice in her mouth. She just blew me by the ice machine.
Right? So it was a public area?
Yeah, like right by the ice machine. Like, at first I was like, yeah, this is good. Like, we're hiding by the ice machine. And then now that
nobody can see you.
And now I'm like,
you're standing next to an illuminated ice machine in the middle of a pool deck.
Where everybody comes to get their ice. Right. So we're bound to be caught at some point.
Right.
But thank Jesus we weren't.
Right.
And
what if you came right when someone watched you? Would you, like, need to be watched to come later?
I've always thought about that. I'm like, what? There's going to be something.
What if
that
some
happens?
Old lady was like, I want to get ice now. I will mind my business, although I need ice. And then you were like, ugh. You know?
Like, my fear is that.
What would you Google then?
Exactly. My fear is that I'll be watching a porno one day. The thing is, I'll just click one. I don't care what, you know, what's going on. As long as the main theme that I like is in there, I'll watch the video.
And, if a BBW is at the end, you'll sit through 90 minutes of a sports movie.
Yeah, just to get that one scene.
Boom. There it is. Jiggle, jiggle. Whoa, credits. What happened?
That was a great movie. That was a beautiful movie.
It was worth it. It was worth it. Who won in the baseball movie?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
Sexy girl at the end, though.
Kaboom.
Big old girl. Fat ass. Everything
big
I
old
like.
Fat ass and some
blue eyes. Naive. Wants to piss off her dad. I'm here. But, like, my fear is that one day, like, I'm going to, like, watch a movie. And then right as I'm coming, like, something's going to happen. Like, the girl's going to get punched in the face or some shit.
Right,
and
right.
Then all of a sudden, that's what I'm into now.
Right, right.
That's my thing. And I don't want that. Because I don't want to escalate any more than I'm already escalated.
Where are you escalated to the moment?
I'll put it to you like this. When that 50 Shades of Grey movie came out,
mm-hmm.
I went and saw it with my mistress. She's kind of my master. And it was a beautiful time.
You have a mistress?
Yeah, I do.
You have a mistress.
Yes.
And she punishes you.
Yes.
And it's a power thing.
I've always, like, I'm the kind of person that picks myself apart a lot, and I, like, try and, like, figure out why things are such. Like, I like to pick apart video games and, like, say, oh, this is symbolic for this. I'm that kind of person. And I think, like, it's because when I was wrestling and I was playing football, you know, I'm a big guy. I could take over any. Like, you know, push people out of the way. I slam people on the ground, you know. And then I've always kind of, like, liked the fact that what if there's a moment where I'm powerless, where I can't kind of do anything. And that kind of became something that, you know, I found, like, a fantasy for. And this girl, she just brought it out of me. And every once in a while, you're like, I'll hit her up and I'll be like, hey, look, I'm down to be dominated right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a man in this society where I dominate everybody all the time, mm-hmm. it's good to know that, you know, I can find my place.
Like when you've been a naughty boy and
yeah,
stuff.
Like I've been a bad boy.
Yeah, yeah, so bad.
So.
So what are the sort of punishments that are doled out for being such like a naughty boy or whatever?
When I'm a bad boy, sometimes, you know, I'll get slapped in the face. Or, you know, I may even get spanked or even hit with the, you know, the little whip. Mm-hmm. If I've been a really bad boy.
So what's a really bad boy?
Really bad boy?
Like, what do you do in your real life to manifest being a really bad boy? Does she bring out things from your life? Or what does she say of the reason for the punishment?
I don't know. She's everywhere with it. She's just like, oh, you've been so naughty, haven't you? I bet you. Yeah. One thing she brings up, she's like, I bet you've been whistling at girls, haven't you? And I was just like, yeah, I have. Yeah, I've been real bad.
Oh, so she's, for all of women, she's getting you back.
Yeah, I feel like she's getting me back for all of womankind.
Wow.
Like, whenever I'm being a creeper,
right,
that's
right.
When she's like, you've been so naughty.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Like, after this, I think I'm going to call her. I feel like I've been naughty recently. God. She... like, we're talking about this. And it's weird because it's like... Mm-hmm. I like to think, like, I'm into, like, normal stuff. Or, like, normal is just such a weird thing. And then, like, for me to be like, yeah, this is my one really, like, crazy thing that I'm into.
Right.
You know, it's my only... I wouldn't call, like, being into BBWs, I wouldn't call it a fetish for me. Mm-hmm. But it's just, like, a preference. Because I'm a bigger guy, I like, you know, I would rather be with a bigger girl. Right. Not saying that, you know, if, a, you know, a slimmer girl were to be like, Thomas, I like you, and I found her attractive, I wouldn't be with her because she's not big. But, like, if I'm going out somewhere and I see a big girl, you know, you're cute in the face, you know, thick in the hips, that's what I'm about.
Mm-hmm. Big ol' hams. You'll sit through a 90-minute movie.
I'll sit through a 90-minute movie. I'll sit through Gandhi. If
someone just splices in.
If somebody's
going running on the beach. Like,
somebody's like, somewhere in this Gandhi movie, there's gonna be like this girl touching herself for about 5 seconds.
Okay. Like, so then, so now that you've seen that film, what do you think of Gandhi's politics? Do you think that passive resistance is the best way to manifest change and social reform?
I don't know, man, but there was like 5 seconds where this girl was touching herself, and I was just like, yes, awesome. And then I left.
But there was like 3 more hours. Yeah, I hear you, man. Mm. Men are freaks. All of us.
Yeah, we're all terrible people.
All right, I kind of have to make a pee-pee. Let's take a break.
All right, cool.
Yo, we're continuing with Tom Jones. He's opening up,
what up
about moments that he realized something was wrong.
Yeah. Back when I was, you know, starting to be accused of stealing jokes. Like I said, one comedian walked up, dapped me off, gave me a piece of paper, and it had, and on it, it said, Mike Birbiglia, Daniel Tosh. Can't remember the third comedian that he wrote. But then it said, I know you're better than this. And what really pissed me off about it was when you grow up a young black male in Louisiana, the one thing that you learn is more important than anything is respect. And you get respect any way you can. Mm. That's, you know, why some people are like, oh, I think I gotta, you know, beat up as many people as you can. For me, it's like just to gain respect, talk to me in my face.
Right.
You know, and like for him to like give me that paper, I was like, what is this bullshit? Like, why can't you come up to me like a man?
Right.
And talk to me. That's what pissed me off the most. And then when I picked it apart, I understand what he was saying. You know, I know what he was getting at. When he said Daniel Tosh, the reason I think he said Daniel Tosh was because I had wrote a blindside joke. It was like, I was talking about when I was doing comedy in high school and how I had, when we have a talent show every year, and then when they do the talent show, they need a host. I was like, fucking right, I'll be the host, because, you know, that's going to be the closest thing I can do to, you know, doing a set at school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the teachers knew I was active in comedy because I'll be sitting in the black class, you know, writing in between whatever we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, I know you do comedy. How would you like to do comedy for the show? And I told her that's a horrible idea. That's the worst idea that you could have. And the joke was essentially like, I know that, you know, you want to be that white lady that comes in and fixes everything for this large black man. We've all seen The Blind Side. Mm-hmm. And that was the joke. And I know at one point, like, I know Daniel Tosh had made a blindside joke. And then I feel like he overacted on that one. He was just like, oh, because this is when, like, my Thomas is stealing jokes was starting to, like, pick up. Where people were starting to talk about it. And it was at the time where a lot of comedians in the scene were being accused of stealing jokes.
Right.
So
there was kind of like a, what's that called? Blackmailing.
It was more of a witch
blacklist.
Hunt. Yeah, the blacklist, exactly.
Like, oh, you're a communist? You're out.
Yeah. And it was and it was just tough because you want to go out and you want to do shows. No, keep that, because I got this, like... Huh?
I'm just making sure the garbage is tucked away.
Okay, cool. But, like, it got to the point where it was just, like, if they accused you of stealing jokes, it was, like, rough because, like, you would try and go do these shows and then, you know, people were being cold. You know, you want to talk to them, see what was up.
Right.
Because my thing is, like, I want unity in this community, dude. I mean, we're all in this together. We're all trying to, you know, do jokes for money. Why can't we all help each other out? Why can't we at least be civil about it? So, like, when I go to a show, you know, I want to come up to you and be like, hey, man, how you doing?
Right.
What you been up to? Everything going good? Awesome. You know, hopefully we can do a show together sometime.
Right, right.
You know? And when it got to the point where it's like, oh, you're stealing jokes, it was just kind of like they didn't want to talk to you. Nobody wanted to be around you. Nobody wanted to be associated with you. And especially when you're in this, you know, field where we're all... And a lot of people say, oh, you know, I don't want to be famous. But, you know, a lot of us do want to be known. We kind of want to make this a career. So it's like, it's shitty when you're trying to make this a career and then the people that know your struggle are dissing you. And it just sucks. You know, it feels like what I've been doing doesn't matter.
Right.
And you kind of want those people around you to be like, yeah, dude, we're doing something awesome.
Right, right. Well, you know, 9 months in, writing all your own stuff, it's a great journey. It's a great struggle, you know, because nobody knows what they're doing when they're 19 years old. Nobody knows what they're doing. I was completely insane when I was 17 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And 19 years old, you know? So, like, the fact that, you know, you stumble into something you love and you do it the wrong way, but kind of because you still have a passion for it, it's like, oh, after the apology, it's like, yeah, you know,
yeah.
It's okay. Now I understand the rules. I was like playing the game the wrong way. I didn't know the rules. Now I kind of totally fully understand emotionally what the rules mean as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Enough, you know, I get it. It's that this kind of pariah shunning is something that's very interesting, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like we can all use put our energies towards promoting ourselves and less energy, perhaps, on destroying each other, maybe, because we don't know who in the future, you know, even for selfish reasons, you don't know in the future who's going to pop. So let's be polite to each other. Let's be cordial and professional business-wise. But, you know, if there's a roast battle, there's a different kind of scenario. And there we're trying to go ruthlessly to try to destroy each other's insecurities.
Yeah.
April 19th at the La Nuit Theater. Doors open 7:30. The show's at 8. This show is so hardcore, I don't even have a battle set up yet. You know, because people are worried about performing in it. You know, they're worried that they're going to get destroyed. You know, there's a... You know, that's just like boxing, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, let's do this boxing fight. You'll look great. Well, what if I get knocked out in the first round? I'll look like a fucking asshole. You know, I don't care how many millions of dollars I'll look. Hey, family, listen, I want to be a boxer. Support me. Clunk. Boom. You know how
like
awful
embarrassed.
That? Yeah, man.
Next day on SportsCenter, watch this jackass get knocked out.
But, you know, maybe whoever loses roast battles comes back stronger the next time. Comes back stronger the next time, you know?
Oh, yeah, dude, definitely.
Whatever doesn't kill you. Yeah. We're all doing it for fun.
Right, it's all fun and games.
It's all fun and games, people.
Until you rip out my ego.
All right. This has been another episode of Highway Motherfucking Diary in the Bag. Thanks to my guests, Jackie Jenkins Jr. and Thomas Jones.
Thank you for having me, man.
All right. Later.
Peace.